You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and today I'm very pleased to have two guests on my show. First up is the leading contender for the Republican nomination for governor in Illinois. He's State Senator Darren Bailey. Then, Sarah Hayden, the senior politics and government reporter for the Dispatch, Argus, and Quad City Times, will share some thoughts on the key races she'll be following primary night, which is next Tuesday. First, I welcome Senator Darren Bailey to Heartland Politics. Senator Bailey, welcome to Heartland Politics. You were first elected to the Illinois House in 2018, the Senate in 2020. What went into your decision to seek the state's highest office this year?
Well, that's certainly been our journey to stand up, and as I got elected as a representative, I was frustrated at the budget that was passed. My state representative that I had helped get elected 14 years earlier was supporting the 2018 budget that ushered in a 32% increase in our taxes and absolutely nothing else. So then I get involved in this journey of government in Illinois, and I find out how broken it is. You know, I showed up in 2019, the first year with Governor Pritzker, and the first time that Illinois Republicans found themselves in the super minority. And I found out very quickly what that meant. That meant that we had absolutely no say. The Democrats are making absolutely no effort to make sure that all voices are heard. So I became frustrated with that. I began speaking out, speaking up. I discovered that the Republican Party here in Illinois was void of leadership, especially whenever I decided to go for Pritzker in 2020. I took that to leadership in both houses and the state party, and no one was interested. And I was frustrated that, you know, local businesses, schools, and churches were being shut down all across this state. So then just moving on into the Senate, I find out how dysfunctional the entire system is. I believe it is simply void of leadership and the engagement of all of the people. So that's really the bare bones of why we are doing this, because no one else seems to be doing it correctly, and the people of Illinois are burdened, and I've got to worry about my wife and I, Cindy, have to worry about our children and grandchildren, whether they have a future here in Illinois. So we believe God has opened the door for us to serve, and we're going to do everything possible to make, you know, to basically restore safety to our streets, get our education back up to par, and make it so that families across Illinois can work and thrive again. That's our mission.
You know, we face no doubt some challenges, and we'll try to hit on some of the ones you just talked about. But last week we had some bad news that the Caterpillar is moving its world headquarters down to Texas. It had previously been in Peoria, here in downstate Illinois, went to Chicago, now it's out of state. Does that send a bad message here, or because it's just the headquarters and it's not as many employees, is it something maybe not to worry too much about?
Well, I think we all know it's the beginning of more to come when they get into Texas and get established. If we don't turn the way that we do business and work with these companies, there'll be more to follow. And you know, that is indeed the argument that I have been fighting for 4 years, seeing four terrible budgets being passed in the state with just more and more spending each year. I'd stand up and I would argue that, you know, Illinois has a spending problem. We've got to start operating our state much like we would our household or our business. We don't spend more than we bring in. And the Democrats and Governor Pritzker, they seem to think that Illinois has a revenue problem, meaning that money is in the taxpayer's pocket, and they come after it every year. So it is the very ideal of Caterpillar and these iconic companies that continue moving out. And what we've seen with the devastation of the Magnificent Mile in Chicago with these amazing businesses exiting the state, they don't want to do business here. Without that business and manufacturing here in our state, people follow them. So the answer for Illinois to become a thriving state is for Illinois to become a business-friendly state and make sure that we attract businesses, because when we attract businesses, they provide jobs, that provides people. People make money, people support local business, and people pay taxes. That's how we grow. That's how we rescue ourselves from the problem that we're in.
What are some ideas, Senator, just following up on that, what would you want to do to make the business environment more friendly here?
Well, I'd like to see some potential tax incentives for small business owners. I think small business even is ultimately the backbone for our economy. If you've got a spouse working for a Caterpillar, for instance, let's provide opportunity for the other spouse to, you know, open small business and be, especially for Southern Illinois and Central Illinois. Interestingly enough, workers' compensation here in Illinois, which, you know, by law, if you have employees, you have to provide workers' compensation insurance. That insurance is 2.5 times higher in Illinois than almost any state around us. And then finally, Illinois unfortunately failed to pay off the debt for the unemployment insurance. So this summer, this fall, businesses are, you know, their unemployment tax is going to, or their unemployment insurance is going to be potentially, it could double. And then when men and women, if they get laid off at jobs, they're going to reap 20% to 30% less in benefits just because Governor Pritzker and the Democrats failed to pay that fund off. And when we indeed had the opportunity with all of this federal COVID money to do that. So, you know, those are a few really big items that if we would address immediately, and we could address immediately, would, in my opinion, prevent, people like Caterpillar from exiting our state, and would open up the door for other business to come to Illinois.
Senator, you're a family farmer down in the southeast part of the state, and I guess I feel like I don't hear state government talking much about the farm economy, and it's obviously it's huge. It's not just big for downstate, but for the Chicago area. Do you have some ideas on how we can further grow the ag economy in Illinois and agribusiness?
Well, the best thing that the state can do is stay out of ag and the agribusiness, because you know, one of the things that Governor Pritzker has promoted and the Democrats have promoted is taxing a lot of the inputs to farming, and I'm telling you, that would be devastating to the economy with the thin profit margins that we already operate on. But most importantly, organizations like the Illinois EPA and, you know, mandating more regulations, that's really what, that's probably one of the biggest roles of Illinois agriculture, especially the ag department, is to make sure that we keep it to where we can, you know, provide safe food for everyone that to put it on their table. Doing that and staying out of the way with these mandates, I've served on the Agriculture Committee in the Senate and the House, and that's really been the biggest role, was to push back when someone has a problem somewhere. The Democrats don't really want to deal with that problem locally. They'd rather create a one-size-fits-all mandate and make it apply either over an entire industry or over the entire state. And that's nonsense. That's one thing that I bring to the table, is accountability and transparency. And when we deal with an issue head-on and take care of it and make sure it doesn't happen again, then we don't have to start passing laws and passing needless regulation that impacts an industry as negatively as you know, some could that we fought off for agriculture.
You know, one of the big issues is our school system in Illinois, and I don't think anybody can argue that we're performing well enough to meet the challenges of the global economy. You're a former school board member. What's your perspective on this? What do we need to do to make our schools perform better across the state?
Well, we need to give the control back to the local communities and the parents. I mean, it's really already there, but unfortunately, these past 4 years under the Pritzker administration and the fact that the Democrats hold the supermajority, they basically committed an all-out assault on our school systems, introducing these woke curriculums like CRT and sex education, good grief, putting tampons in fourth-grade boys' bathrooms. I mean, this is a problem because we've removed ourselves from the key purpose and reason for education, educating our children so that they can prosper and thrive and get a job. Government needs to get out of that, out of that business. State government has no business telling each individual community what they should be doing. And so I've made it very clear that a day one agenda, of course, will be firing Dr. Ayala, the state board superintendent. I will be cleansing the entire state board, asking for their resignations, and we will be nominating people with common sense who have good ideas to restoring education. That's the first thing we do. Secondly, we remove all of these unfunded mandates from our school systems because our schools are heavily burdened with administration, and the state has forced that because when the state tries to give the school something or tell them they must do something, the state's also insisting that the school system tell them how it's going. So that requires more administration. And then finally, making sure that the school boards are answerable to their parents, to the parents of these children, that they indeed have a say. And I've seen that being violated in many places across the state. So having a governor who will stand up and convey that, ultimately, we've got to have school choice. The money should, I believe in the voucher system, the money should follow the child. We create healthy competition. And then I think that is the key ingredient to making or allowing our public school system to thrive again when there's some true competition and parents have choices.
We face a lot of big issues in this campaign, but you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like the biggest one I hear about anyway is crime. The General Assembly passed and the governor signed a crime bill, reform legislation. What's your thoughts on that, and how big of a priority is that going to be for you to maybe take a look at this and take a different approach on crime?
Well, when we have, like I said, failed school systems and high taxes, ultimately, if people don't feel safe, they're not going to live here and raise their children. So the Safety Act of 2021 definitely created some major problems. We saw mass exoduses of police officers. Police officers were taking early retirement. They left their jobs for other work. They left the state for other positions. And it's left our state devastated. So we've got several problems. Our Department of Corrections, so we've got the inmates have more rights than those working there do. And now we're really seeing that across our state, that people who create crimes, they've got more rights than we as citizens do. I mean, I'm talking to small businesses in Chicago that are fed up and they're scared because when someone can walk into their business and grab a handful of whatever they want and walk away without being prosecuted or detained, that's a problem. And again, this one-size-fits-all mentality, this is why this reason has occurred, because there's been some problems in parts of the state. Chicago, Kim Fox and Mayor Lightfoot, Governor Pritzker, they've decided that it's too burdensome to prosecute people. So why not just let people go free and hope they don't do it again? So I'll be standing up to holding guilty parties accountable, and to make sure that if there's state's attorneys and people out there that aren't doing their jobs, that the people of Illinois are going to know about it. But we have got to restore the positions of law and order, because I think that's sometimes ingredient number one to destroying the constitutional republic is to break down law and order. So what we're doing, what Governor Pritzker has allowed these last 4 years, as you suggested, it is not working, and it is creating a reason for people to leave Illinois, and it is deterring families from coming to Illinois public safety.
Final question for gubernatorial candidate Darren Bailey. Senator, what I'm going to give you, as I've given all the guests, your opponents on my show, a chance to make a final argument, so to speak, like in a court case. What's your competitive advantage over the other candidates in this primary, and what makes you the best choice?
Well, the simple fact that I'm a farmer. I've started a trucking business, an excavating business. I've had to work and build things with my hands. I believe the obvious answer is when people think about what a farmer does, farmers fix things that are broken, farmers solve problems, and farmers grow things. And I think that's the ingredients of what Illinois needs. And you couple that with the fact that I don't just sit around and talk about the problems. I actually got involved and I did something. I'm the only candidate that served on our school board. I'm the only candidate that you know ran for the state house whenever I problems, and then when our senator stepped down, I stepped into that position at the will and request of our community. And then I did things. I pushed back hard against the gas tax, and I made sure all of Illinois knew what some of their Republicans and Governor Pritzker and the Democrats were doing. And, I sued Governor Pritzker. I sued him when no one else would. I am not an attorney. And we've got attorneys running in the governor candidate, and no one did anything. They sat. And now that they see an opportunity, everyone wants to stand up and tell you what they are going to do. My request to the voters out there is simply take a look at what I have been doing. I don't have to tell you what I'm going to do. I've been doing it. You can go to BaileyForIllinois.com. You can go to our Facebook page, Darren Bailey for Governor. You can go to my state Senate page, Darren Bailey, State Senator, and you can see when I've stood up and pushed back against all of this nonsense that we are so frustrated about. So that's my pitch. You've got someone that's been actually walking the talk, and to the point that a conservative Republican, there's a lot of concern that the conservative Republican, could someone like this really win the state house? Well, I say absolutely, because when's the last time that Illinois had a true conservative Republican that actually got anything done? And it's been 40 plus years at least, and Illinois has done nothing but plummeted, spiraled out of control since then. So it's time for a change, and I sure would be honored and blessed to earn the trust and the vote of all of the listeners out there.
And thank you, Senator, for providing your website and your information. I had overlooked that, but I appreciate you doing that. And I'll just say for our listeners that Senator Bailey is one of the few candidates whose site made it very easy to reach out and arrange this interview. A lot of them don't have any way of reaching the candidate to talk to them. So that is something that I appreciate.
I appreciate that comment, and that's the problem. That, a government of the people, by the people, for the people. When you exclude the people, then you have the problems that we have in Illinois, and it's going to be a new day as governor, and I appreciate you saying that.
Senator, thank you very much for taking the time out for what I'm sure is a very busy schedule to spend time today, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. Have a wonderful day.
And now I'm happy to be joined by Sarah Hayden, who again is the senior politics and government reporter for the Dispatch, Argus, and Quad City Times. Sarah, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Robin.
Well, we'll talk about several races, but is there one race in particular that you're going to be watching very closely this next Tuesday night, primary night in Illinois?
Most definitely. I think that everybody is most interested in watching the 17th Congressional District race, and this would be for the seat that's being vacated by outgoing Congresswoman Sherry Bustos, who announced last year that she would not seek a sixth term. This is a hotly contested seat. We've got six Democrats who are vying for that seat, so six in the primary election, and then there's two Republicans. But out of the six, we do have a few local candidates here in Rock Island County. I think that probably the most familiar name would be our former WQAD meteorologist, Eric Sorensen, and then Rock Island County Board Member Angie Normoyle. And then the remaining four candidates are from Rockford. There are two who are Rockford City Council members, and then two others who are in different professions. But definitely a lot of interest surrounding Angie Normoyle and Eric Sorensen here locally. And then in terms of Republicans, we've got Esther Joy King and Charlie Helmick, who are both from East Moline.
Do you get any sense of a keep the seat local movement? Does anybody talk about that? Because that seat's been in the Quad Cities, gosh, back on to the 60s, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. So Phil Hare, Lane Evans, and then Sherry Bustos, it's been held locally for a long time. You're right. And so there's definitely a desire to keep that seat held here locally in Rock Island County. But, you know, I have to tell you, I think that the competition coming out of Rockford is very strong between the two Rockford City Council members, Jonathan Lojman and Leticia Wallace. And, you know, of course, as a reporter, I receive emails constantly from their communications directors with their latest endorsements. And Jonathan Lojman is getting big endorsements, including from Senator Dick Durbin. And, you know, Leticia Wallace is bringing in her own heavy endorsements as well. So I'm definitely seeing a lot of interest being generated around those two.
And, of course, that'll be a very competitive race in the fall. What other races are you looking at from a local angle next Tuesday night?
Oh, sure. So the 36th State Senate District here, we are seeing some really a matchup between some very familiar names here in this district. We've got Rock Island Mayor Mike Tomes, and he will face off against former State Rep candidate Glenn Evans for the Republican primary. And then in the Democrat primary, State Rep Mike Halpin is unopposed. So Mike Halpin is vacating his state rep seat, and he's now running for state senate. So obviously he will advance to the general election in the fall. And probably it's looking like Mike Tomes will probably pull this off fairly easily. He has, as Rock Island mayor, you know, he's a two-term mayor. He's very well-liked. He has a lot of community support. I would be surprised if he didn't win the primary.
Going down, right down ballot, there's a primary, I believe, for the state legislative seat, at least on the Democratic side up there.
Right, that's correct. That's another big race, actually. So Illinois' 72nd district for state rep. This, we're going to see a big showdown here between three very well-known members of the community for the Democratic primary, and those people are Thurgood Brooks, who is a community activist, Jeff Deppe. He's a very local labor union guy. He's currently on the Rock Island County Board. And then we've got Greg Johnson, also very well-known union organizer. And Greg Johnson ran for state senate 4 years ago and lost by the narrowest of margins I've ever seen, like 0.01%. And his race was very heavily financed. He lost that to Neil Anderson 4 years ago. So this is these three candidates are very well known in the community. They all have their own different areas of support. I'm seeing lots of yard signs, lots of flyers, lots of movement, lots of activity and attention on this race for state representative in the 72nd district. And then the Republican, there's only one Republican in that race, and that would be Tom Martins. So he will advance unopposed to whoever will be on the general election ballot in November.
Now, it's interesting. This is the first election where we have new political boundaries for state and federal offices. And we're doing this primary election in June, which this is different as well. Do you sense any confusion out there among voters, or are these two facts having any impact on these elections at all that you can see?
No, I don't think so. I think the community is just kind of rolling along with the changes very well. I feel that it's been the new dates have been adapted to. Of course, having a primary this late in the year is very unusual, and then it gives the candidates a very short window to scramble to prepare for the November election.
Have you seen a lot of the, of course, we've got other important races further up the ballot. I just had Senator Bailey on earlier on this show. Have candidates been coming to the Quad Cities a lot, statewide candidates? I mean, it used to be that was a regular stop when statewide candidates did tours around the state. But since so much of the vote now is up in Chicago and the suburbs, I'm just curious from your angle as a veteran reporter, do candidates still come to the places like the Quad Cities as often as they used to?
I'm just getting a lot of press notifications about the local candidates trying to hold fundraisers or campaign rallies. Now, as far as Senators Duckworth and Durbin, they have not been through the Quad Cities lately on a campaign stop, per se. And I haven't really seen a lot of activity regarding other statewide candidates. Of course, there's quite a few running for, what do I want to say?
The governor, governor's race?
Yeah, none of them have come through.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah.
So it sounds like campaigns are transitioning anyway down here to more just sending releases and TV ads and less on personal appearances, which I'm not sure that's a good thing.
I think that everybody's trying to wait to get through the primary, decide to, you know, wait and see if it's worth their time and attention. You know, I think once they're through the primary and we know who's going to be on the ballot in the fall, then I think we're going to see things ramp up and there's going to be a big push and effort.
Final question. We've just got about a minute and a half here, but what in your talks with voters and just what you're seeing from candidates, what are the top several issues that are on the minds of voters heading into this cycle?
Well, you know, taxes are always a top issue, economic development. You know, as far as the state legislature goes, of course, there's always gun control. Now we've got abortion as an unexpected issue that came up out of nowhere. So those are definitely top hot-button issues that I've heard discussion about. These are questions that our voters are asking. They want to know about where their candidates stand on gun control and abortion. And, of course, taxes. Taxes, taxes.
Yeah, that's some of the same issues we hear about every cycle. Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be very interesting, and I really appreciate you taking the time to come on. My guest has been Sarah Hayden. She's the senior politics and government reporter for the Dispatch, Argus, and Quad City Times. She shared with us a little bit the key races she'll be watching, and these are local elections that are very much as important as the one at the top of the ticket. And I would just take this opportunity to remind everybody to please go vote Tuesday, exercise your rights. And again, Sarah, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you, Robin. My pleasure.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.